Welcome back to the table, Alan.
The Garnet Table.
That's the name of our podcast, The Garnet Table. Welcome to The Garnet Table, episode 97.
That's the year I was born.
Don't do that.
Don't do that to me. Don't, please.
You're already too young. Don't do this.
I'm a poor baboon. I'm 13, 6 is 77, and we're podcast co-hosts.
Like, when I turn around too fast, I bump my head on 30. Don't do this.
Oh, my God. What's going on? What are we doing today?
So, today we're going to be playing a special game called Garnet Poker.
Oh.
Garnet Poker. Alan.
Bad.
So, I'm going to explain the rules of Garnet Poker.
Tell it to him at home.
Start with a standard deck of playing cards, but remove all face cards. This should leave only 2 through 10 and the ace of each suit. The scoring system works as follows. Ace is the highest card, then 10, then 9, then 8, and so on. However, there is also an element of counters. Spades beat diamonds. Diamonds beat hearts. Hearts beat clubs. Clubs beat spades. This only works this way. For instance, spades and hearts have no interaction with each other, and thus a showdown between them would be determined purely by card value. Both players buy in with one chip and then deal 2 cards to each player. These cards are, in fact, your opponent's cards. When it comes time to play, they're what your opponent plays. However, your opponent has your cards and you have theirs, so both players are operating without actually knowing what their hand is. Decide to yourself which of these cards is A and B. These labels are important for the next step of the game. Do not change them until new cards have been dealt, at which point you can decide a new A and B. Players now ask 3 questions of each other, taking turns. Your questions can be picked from the list below. The question must be answered truthfully. The question list is as follows. Does my A card beat my B card? Does my B card beat my A card? Are my cards of the same suit? Are my cards close in value to each other, meaning within 2 either way? If A is 6, B would have to be 4, 5, 7, or 8. If those were your cards, how much would you bet? Do you think either of my cards are bad? What is the suit of one of my cards? After asking questions, decide which of your 2 cards, A or B, you want to play. Players then bet as per regular poker, taking turns who bets first each round. The game ends when one player taps out or runs out of chips. A copy of these rules are provided in the show notes via a Google document. If at any point you wish to peruse them or use them to play your own version of Garnet Poker, you may reference them.
So, Alan.
Hi!
Are these rules clear?
Crystal.
Perfect. Are you ready to play Garnet Poker?
Extremely. I have never been more ready for anything in my life.
I don't believe you.
What else would I be more ready for than playing Crystal Poker with Garnet 6? I mean, what? Let's get into it.
Sleep. Sounds like sleep, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to deal some cards. I will give you the first question, and I will have the first bet for this first round, and then we'll alternate.
Heck yeah. Ooh, I have cards.
All right. And we'll do the muting trick to tell the audience, of course.
Of course. A horse, of course.
Listener, Alan has 8 of spades, 10 of diamonds. That's A and B, respectively.
Listener, I have a 3 of hearts and a 5 of spades. That means that 6 technically has a 3 of hearts and a 5 of spades. Okay, my first question is, does my A card beat my B card?
I would say that in this instance, your A card beats your B card.
Excellent, excellent.
My question for you is, what is the suit of one of my cards?
The suit of one of your cards is hearts.
Hearts, okay. Got it.
My second question for you is, are my cards of the same suit?
No, they are not. does my A card beat my B card?
Yes.
Okay. Your question.
My final
last question.
My final question is, and I'm just looking at what I've got so far. Are my cards close to each other in value?
They're not within one.
Okay. Which one do you want to take?
I have one more question still.
Oh, sorry.
So, do you think either of my cards are bad?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take my B card.
Okay, I will take my A card.
Okay. So currently we both have one in the pot. I have first bet. I will bet two.
I will call on that bet.
Okay. Six in the pot. Showdown.
You took which one again?
I took the B card.
Okay. Here comes the flop. Oh, man.
So I have a five of clubs.
No!
Alan has a eight of spades, and clubs beat spades.
No!
So I won.
This sucks.
What a shitty game.
What a bad game when I lose.
All right. So, how many cards did we start out with? Did we decide the chips?
Well, is it based on how many we had overall?
No. This is a way to gain cards. So let's. Well, we did 20 last time, so we both started with 20.
Yeah.
So that means I am up to 23, and you are down to 17.
Got it. You only get yours back? You don't get mine? Oh, no, you get yours back and mine, which brings you up to 23. I understand. Sorry.
Right,
numbers.
Right. Okay, I'm going to deal cards again.
Great.
This time, I have first question, you have first bet.
Let's read the cards to the players. Players, six has a six of spades and a two of hearts. That's a six of spades on A and a two of hearts on B.
Listener, Alan has a three of clubs and an eight of hearts. All right, ready when you are.
Yeah.
I get first question,
yep.
So I am going to ask, do you think either of my cards are bad?
Yes. We should also definitely, I don't know if you specified this in the rules, we're not allowed to lie because it's an internet call and we can't,
mm-hmm.
That would mess things up. My question is, if these were your cards, how much would you bet?
I'd do four.
Interesting.
Does my A card beat my B card?
Yes.
Okay.
Does my B card beat my A card?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I got this.
Are my cards of the same suit?
Nope.
Okay.
Are my cards close in value to each other?
No.
All right. Can I pick which card I'm picking?
Go for it.
I'm going to take B.
Okay. I'm going to take A.
Can I raise this?
Yeah, it's your bet. Bet whatever you like.
I'm going to bet five.
I'll fold. Okay, so now six has 22. Alan has 18.
Can you now? You can't tell me what I had now, right?
Why would I?
Because it'll make me feel good.
The listener knows.
Oh, listener, I hope I won that. I probably did win that.
Okay, you have first question. I have first bet.
Okay, first question.
You gotta tell them what you have first.
Hey, listener, how you doing? Six has an ace of spades. Nope, that's an ace of clubs. Sorry, I always get spades and clubs mixed up. It's an ace of clubs and a three of spades.
Listener, Alan has two of clubs, nine of diamonds.
Do I get first question?
You do.
First question is... what is the suit of one of my cards?
Oh yeah, we haven't used that one much yet, have we?
Yeah, it's the good one.
Clubs.
Oh!
Does my A card beat my B card?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, yeah. Are my cards of the same suit?
No.
So far you said I have a club?
Yes, I have said that.
And they're not the same suit.
Are my cards close in value to each other?
No.
Hmm.
They super are not close to each other.
Okay.
Super Nintendo. If these were your cards, how much would you bet?
I'd probably bet 5.
Okay.
But right back at you, if these were your cards, how much would you bet?
Oh, like 5, yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Please.
I'm going to take my B card.
I'm going to take my A card.
Okay. On the table.
Trying to be quiet. Wait for it. And I win.
No, you don't.
Wait, yours is a club. Clubs beat spades.
God damn it. Right. I love it. Fuck, when I know I got the it rules. Backwards. Shit. I wrote these rules.
I love
All right.
it when I know the rules.
Alan has 2 of clubs. 6 has 3 of spades. Clubs beat spades.
I gotta get more note paper. I'm running out of note paper.
We fucked up our betting, though.
How did we do that?
We didn't bet. We just placed our cards
yeah.
down.
Yeah. Well, let's just say we both bet 1,000 on that one. We both went all in.
Let's see. It was my bet, so it was my screw up. And we both said each other should bet 5, so I guess I'll give you 5. I'll be nice.
Thanks.
So that leaves me with 16, whereas you have 24. Okay.
Now we're on round 4.
We are on round 4.
Am I still recording? Yes.
I don't know, Alan. Okay.
We've had issues before. Now I'm here. Hello. Okay.
All right. Dealing cards. I have first question. You have first bet.
Okay.
For round 4.
Do I have to place the bet first?
No, we place the bet after the questions.
That's what I thought. Sorry. Okay. I'm ready.
And also, you know, tell people what you have in front of you. God, you're so tired, Alan.
I'm not tired. You're tired. Hey, listener. How you doing? I have a 6 has an ace of clubs and a 6 of... What are the puppy feet? Are those spades? No, it's an ace of spades and a 6 of clubs. I'm sorry. It's very late. Here we go.
Listener, Alan has 10 of hearts, 5 of spades. Really getting a stupid number of good cards, frankly. All right. Okay. I have first question, so I will ask, what is the suit of one of my cards?
Spades.
Okay.
Does my B beat my A?
No. Does my B beat my A?
Yes.
Okay.
Are my cards of the same suit?
No.
Okay. All right. That was a secret pairing of questions I needed. I'm good.
Do you think either of my cards is bad?
No. No.
Okay.
I don't think either of your cards is bad. The problem with that question is it's like the most
subjective. Yeah.
Yeah. Are my cards close in value to each other?
No.
Okay.
If these were your cards, how much would you bet?
Oh, like 7.
You always take a tone of voice where it sounds like you're lying on that one.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's cheating.
That's not the idea. No, I would bet 7.
Okay. Okay. Would you like your B or your A?
I would like my A.
I would like my A. Betting time.
I'm going to bet... Let's see, I have 24. I'm going to bet 4.
I'll see your 4 and raise you 4.
8 in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Flop 'em.
You calling?
Yes.
Okay. So, Alan has 10 of hearts. Six has ace of spades. There is no suit interaction. Therefore, aces beat hearts.
Aces high, baby.
All right. Well, I managed to ante that up to a pot of 18, which is pretty good. So that means that I am up to 24 and you're down to 16 now.
Yes, correct.
Wait, no, my math is bad.
No, I bet 4, you bet another 4? No, you bet up to 6.
I saw your 4 and raised you 4, which meant we had both bet 8, but there's the initial pot of 2.
Oh.
Of 1 from each of us. So that's... Right, so that means that we both lost... So you lost 9 and I gained 9. So I'm up to 25, you are down to 15.
And you're at 29?
I'm at 25.
Sorry, numbers. Okay, cool. That's fine. I can still win this.
Yeah, well, you have one more round to do so.
Oh, are we? Oh, we're doing a finite number. Yeah, all right, cool. I got this.
Right, because that's what we agreed on, because we didn't want it to go too long.
Rock and roll. Let's fucking crush it. I'm super excited.
That's why I bet super hard that game, is because I was like, yeah. I'm behind and I need the lead.
Yeah, there was multiple parts there where it didn't come off on the recording, but I bit my lip really hard because you said I'm going to pick my A, and I was like, fuck.
But I tell you what, like, I could just fold and win this. I'm not going to do that. We're going to play.
Yeah, it's not fun. Come on.
No, it's not fun. I'm just saying for the listener, I'm going in. We're playing for real. You get first question. I'm dealing cards.
That's my sun buy right there. Let's look at the cards. Oh, it doesn't even let me cheat. It doesn't let me see. I was going to try and cheat and just see your cards.
Of course you were.
No, what's that supposed to mean?
What? I didn't say anything. I've got to go talk to the listener.
I'm going to talk to a listener. Hi.
Listener, Alan has 5 of hearts, 8 of diamonds. I think I can win this one.
Hi, listener. Here's a fun one, because 6 has a 4 of hearts and a 4 of spades.
I just want to let you know, before you ask your question, that, like, you can fold and just... Because whatever you have left at the end of this is how much you have. You've still got 15 garnets. You could walk away with some garnets. I could not take everything from you for once.
But I need to win.
I know that about you. Go ahead with your questions.
Go ahead with your bullshit. What's the higher... A or B? You can't ask that question. I was trying to see if I could word it in a way that would get you to answer without. Does my A beat my B?
No.
Okay.
Are my cards the same suit?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Not even close. Are my cards bad?
No.
Okay.
Are my cards bad? Either of them.
No.
Okay.
What is the suit of one of my cards?
Hearts.
Okay.
Are my cards close in value to each other?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then this just comes down to suit, doesn't it? What card do you want?
I want my B.
Okay. I want my A. Betting time.
Betting time. One last call for cards.
I'll just start with 2. I'll bet 2.
Okay. I will take your 2 and raise you 2. I'm going home with money today, baby.
Okay. I'll call.
Okay.
Knowing that what this does to the game, I took B, you took A.
It's just going to lead to a difference.
Oh no, I'm sorry. You took A. You took B, I took A, is how it
okay.
went. On the table.
Drop your cards. Oh, no. Wait.
Alan has 8 of diamonds. 6 has 4 of spades. However, spades beat diamonds.
Fuck! I hate this game! I fold!
I did it! I won!
I hate it. I don't wanna...
All right. Well, I got to do some math to figure out. Okay, so we had four in the pot plus the one.
Every time I win, six steals my garnets, and every time six wins, I feel bad. This is a game about me feeling bad.
So we ended this game with six at 30, Alan at 10. You still get some garnets?
You were already winning the game.
I placed Tiger a really big bet, if you don't remember, on the outcome of the main match, which is the odds are against me, so I might not be winning right now. I don't actually know.
Oh, great. All right, cool. I love it. This is a good podcast.
Oh, it is a good podcast. It is a good podcast. So I get to give you homework.
Is it math homework? Do I have to do a problem set?
You know what, Alan? I'm going to take it easy on you.
I get to watch a music video.
No, you get to play a game that I know you have access to.
Oh.
You get to play Cook Serve Delicious 2 for the personal computer.
I do love video games. Sometimes.
Cook Serve Delicious 2 is a frantic, madcap, some would say WarioWare-style cooking game where you run a restaurant and attempt to serve customers according to their orders. It is a game of fast fingers, quick reads, and flying oil in a frying pan. I don't know. I didn't know how to end that, but it needs like a third one.
Flying oil in a frying pan. It sounds like a thing. It sounds like a toy commercial from the 90s. I played the first Cook Serve Delicious on my iPad a lot. It was really fun. These developers are also really nice. I met them at a convention once.
That's
cool.
That's great, because I was debating making you play the first one, because I was like, if you haven't played the first one, dropping you into two, which adds even more mechanics, might be tricky. But if you played the first one, that's perfect. You can play two, and then we can talk about Cook Serve Delicious, which is great.
It's delicious. And we can talk about cooking.
We can talk about cooking, which is also delicious. All right, Alan, do you want to take it into the intro?
I do. Hit him with the robot voice.
The Garnet Wager is a game.
Leaving all this in.
The Garnet Wager is a game where two players compete in challenges while watching episodes of The Genius. Challenges occur once per podcast, and the winner receives a quantity of garnets depending on the challenge, and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. If they liked it, the winner receives an additional garnet. Garnets may also be wagered in various bets according to the whims of the players. Garnets are not obtained automatically. When you successfully win a garnet, you have 5 minutes to claim that garnet or becomes available for your opponent to claim. The first person to say Jin-Ho after 5 minutes have elapsed receives the garnet, so long as they inform their opponent of the acquisition at the end of the episode. This is the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Folks, this is another episode of the Garnet Wager. You've tuned in. We're starting. This is the start of the episode. This is how we start. Except for not really, because the challenge was before that, and then there was the intro, but this is the part where we talk about the actual episode itself, and I just didn't want to open with hello everyone and welcome, because I always do that.
And now we're kind of trapped in this weird loop where you're just kind of going, and it's really exciting. And now I'm going because we passed the baton to me, and I don't really know where to naturally stop. I guess theoretically I could just find a natural stopping point in my voice, but here we are. This week, we watched episode 7 of The Genius. It's called Open Pass.
Which is a bad name for a game.
It also describes, like, the not even the most interesting part of the game.
And also the most unnecessary part of the game, because, like,
yeah,
they rename a really basic thing to Open Pass, I guess, so they could call this Open Pass. But, like, you could call this game Keep or Discard, and it would be exactly the same and also make more sense. I don't know. I guess it's probably a translation thing.
Almost definitely, now that I think about it.
But
No, but this episode ruled. It kicked butt. It, like, kicked my own butt.
You know what my favorite thing about this episode is?
That you got to watch it with me?
It wasn't scripted. And Nick, and not Nick, I'm sorry, I recorded Balcrow recently. And Alan?
Yes.
I brought proof this week.
I can't believe you called me Nick.
I'm sorry.
What's your proof?
So I got a message from a listener, Morton F., who contacted me via the Twitter website to let me know that, first off, there have been interviews with contestants in informal settings after the season where they confirmed that the only scripted thing is the order of entering the hall before the main game begins.
Okay.
And then there's also the fact that we haven't been watching, and we should probably start watching, the behind-the-scenes videos. Because there are behind-the-scenes videos for every episode. Sometimes there's more than one. And, for example, there's one for episode 3, which is just the entire death match, which takes 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Whoa.
And if it was scripted, they wouldn't bother recording 1 hour and 8 minutes of kind of boring death match. Because I watched some of it, and it's fucking boring. They wouldn't bother with that if it was scripted.
But of course they would say it's not scripted because it's super scripted.
But it's not the writers saying it's not scripted because they wouldn't talk about it. It's the people who were on the show saying it wasn't scripted. It's like Songmin and Kyungran and shit.
Oh, okay. And if Kyungran said it, then it's true. That's my axiom.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could finally put to bed the idea that the genius is scripted. Which, by the way, actually, defense? No, just sort of on your side of things. This was a big debate that happened a lot during the first season. A lot of people thought that the show was scripted as well, not just you.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
So, because the show was a little too good.
Songmin is so good. He's just so perfect.
Yeah,
and some of the alliances just click so well that it makes the uncanny moments where they're really realistic feel weird. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Six, what did you think of Open Pass in general?
So this is a weird one because this is another, it turns out, I thought I didn't know anything about, okay, so I've mentioned before, I know one fact about season 2.
Yep.
In regards to casting. And then I thought that was all I knew about the genius after what I'd seen, but that turned out that wasn't true. I'd forgotten that before watching the show, I read an article pitching me on the genius and why I should watch it. By Gita Jackson over on Kotaku.com. It's a very good article. Maybe we'll link it in the show notes. And as an example of why the show is good, she basically describes the twist of episode 7.
Should we just tell people because they should have watched it by now?
Sure. I mean, I wasn't sure if I remembered it right, but basically this game is, I'll describe the rules briefly in a minute here, but basically it's sort of a card game, and a big part of the card game is being able to tell what your cards are without being able to see the front of them, only the back. And everyone else figures out a sort of a way to do it by spending garnets, and Jin-Ho figures out a way to do it by the card backs because he realizes that they are not horizontally symmetrical.
Right, cheating. Not cheating.
Not cheating.
Okay, I'm sorry. Oh my god, the quiet... I hope you keep all of that. That was like when I tell my dad that I got a C minus on an exam, and it's just, he just seethes. Oh my god! I know it's not cheating. I'm just being silly.
Before we started this show, I got in a big argument with someone. I alluded to it on an earlier episode, but on the Jin-Ho, the classic Jin-Ho, on whether that was cheating, and I found the argument kind of like both amusing and frustrating.
So much! I'm so mad! As you said it, my brain had a Usual Suspects moment of being like, wait,
I'm never going to win! I really do want to talk about that, but also, yes, I was Jin-Ho-ing you.
Go on with your shit.
Maybe we should talk about a rule where if you catch someone Jin-Ho-ing, it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, I will instill it. We'll instate it this week.
Obviously, you can't change a rule in order... Like, you can't retroactively enforce a law. And obviously, we couldn't retroactively enforce a rule. But we could talk about that off the air and have that maybe be a thing.
Sure.
But yeah, so I was talking with someone about the Jinho, and they were convinced that it was cheating. And I disagreed with them, and the conversation was kind of frustrating because I didn't really feel like they had very good evidence, right? It's like, turns out, yeah, I thought I was right in an argument. Everyone is surprised. But I don't know. So I feel like, to me, a huge point of the genius is looking for things that in other games would look like cheating. And I think you agree, but when you make jokes about it, it just, there's a part of my brain that just like sparks real quick.
Yeah, and I don't want to say I live for making that part of your brain spark, but that's mean. It's just, we're having fun. We're having a good time. We're friends.
On the latest episode of Bottle Crow, as we were getting ready to start the episode, my co-host started playing memes through a soundboard.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I don't even know what that meme is. That's garbage. And then he turned the first 10 minutes in the episode of explaining the meme to me because he knew it would make me angry. So trust me, a lot of people in my life do this. It's fine. It's totally fine.
It's because you're usually like a placid monk. You're just so like, nothing like phases you. You're just so unbothered with things. So then when I get to rub you the wrong way, it's like, ooh, I did something illicit.
I don't know. If I'm allowed to fucking old man for a second here, please. I've been through some fucking shit in my life.
Yeah, but that's why you're like super cool and chill, because you've earned it.
Yeah, I guess so. You know who else is super cool and chill?
Who's that?
Songmin. Because this episode opens with Songmin coming in with like a super loose V-neck white shirt and like a fucking like bell bottoms, almost like these dopey looking pants.
My man.
And like,
why?
It's him and Kyungran coming in and talking about how great it is that they've been cooperating lately. And Kyungran's like, it's interesting outfit you've got on. And Songmin's like, ah, my outfit. It invokes my belief in destiny. I'm asking for divine protection. It's just like, Songmin.
Songmin, you're a cartoon character.
We got a lot of pre-game banter this episode. I feel like last episode we really skated through it real fast, but we got a fair bit of content this time, didn't we?
I was content with the content.
Mm-hmm. My notes, I don't know how good my notes are this week, because this is for the first time we tried watching an episode together.
Oh my god, which led to me, because I didn't rewatch it, taking like less than half a page of notes.
Yeah, I only took like 2.25, which is like, okay, compared to my usual like 4. But I think they'll be good enough. It's also, I feel like I just knew what minutia to ignore, you know? Like, part of taking notes, because I just watched it again to take notes a second time, because the first time I didn't take any notes. And that's too much time, and I'm not going to do that again. But it did mean that I knew what things weren't important and weren't worth writing down, you know? Because your first time through, you're like, oh, I don't know, is this going to come up again? Is there going to be another mention of Sungyu scratching his nose? I don't know. It's like, no, that doesn't fucking matter.
None of it matters.
Speaking of Sungyu, Sungyu came in this week with, speaking of clothes and outfits, he looked like a schoolboy. He looked like he was about to star in a Persona game. He had a look.
He totally looked like a Persona protagonist.
It was great. And, you know, Songmin and Kyungran immediately are like apologizing again for doubting him last week. And then they talk a little bit about Gura and Gura leaving, and they're like, oh, Gura, you know, he had no hard feelings to Jinho. Jinho just played his best. And Pung, he's really pissed at Pung. It's like, all right, what? I guess he was really mad about that rock, paper, scissors, I guess.
just furious.
Just steaming. Oh, rock, paper, scissors is a cancer game, and it makes him want to die.
The way that they play, we've talked about this, but the way they play rock, paper, scissors on this game is what makes me want to die. Before, is the Songmin saying only the rich survive in this world? Is that after the rules?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, well,
that's the best. That's one of the best parts.
It's a hell of a line. I don't want to skate past the last bit of pregame content.
Yes.
So Pung and Jinho arrive together, and the cast starts pressuring them, because it's like, okay, so you two teamed up and you took down Gura. And it's like, why did you do that? And Jinho's like, some of you folks may not have known, I was part of Gura's fan club as well. You know, Pung was, and, you know, Songmin was, so was I. But I was mad that Gura was treating me so disrespectfully. I was his fan, and he wouldn't give me the time of day. He was always talking over me. He was always yelling. And they're like, but you were his fan. And they were like, even if you, he said, quote, even if you like someone, it's different when you start living together. It's like, all right, my dude. And then he says, like, again, this is another direct quote. They're like, wait, really? And he's like, that's right. I wanted revenge. Why didn't he recognize this delicate fan's feelings? You're like, Jinho.
Anime villain.
I know you want to be Songmin, but it's never going to happen. This is too much.
I really like Jinho becoming more of a, like, a personality.
Yeah, he's got a lot, more passion now.
Yeah, Jinho has always been the, like, smart strategist who quietly does not emote in the background. And I think they pointed that out in this episode where they were like, you don't, like, they talk about his accent specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like, you talk weird, and like, you don't, like, show emotion on your face that often. And he's like, yeah, I play video games and I'm like using a computer all the time. Like, I don't.
Yeah, he's like, all you assholes, you know, like, live on TV. I play StarCraft. What do you want?
Yeah. What do you want from me? Which, like, big same, big mood, etc.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
That's why we podcast, because you don't get to see me just, like, frowning the whole time.
Yeah, you don't get to see my poker face. Poker face. Which you can't read. That one hurt, Alan. So shall I explain the rules of Open Pass?
Please.
So, in this game, Open Pass, players will receive a set of 20 basic cards, which I love saying basic cards. It makes me think of Magic the Gathering. They will consist of numbers 0 through 9, 2 plus signs, 2 minus signs, 2 multiplication signs, and 2 division signs. You may purchase extra card packs for 1, 2, or 3 garnets. There are different card packs assigned to each value. Build a deck of 20 cards and use those cards to create a math equation. The dealer will show you the order of your deck after shuffling. You can reshuffle up to 3 times. The dealer then plays cards from the end of the equation to the beginning. When a card is played, it is face down. You may choose to open, or keep it, or close, or discard it. If multiple of the same card type are in a row, only the leftmost card is used. In other words, if you have a 5, 6, and 7 in a row, only the 7 counts. If you have a plus and a minus, the minus would count because it's the leftmost. If the equation will be 10 cards long, which means that out of your set of 20, you can only discard up to 10. I already went over that rule. If you have a sign right before the equal sign, if you have like a minus right before the equals, that sign is discarded. And if you have a sign at the front of the equation, a 0 is placed before it. Create the highest scoring equation you can. First place will get 5 garnets, second place gets 2. And it is at this point that Songmin has observations about capitalism and the nature of the economy and the true socialist ambition. Only the rich
survive
in this
world. Your Man Crush Monday is in the DSA.
Really?
No, I wish, though.
That, I mean, you know, the Democratic Songmin Association, it could happen.
Oh my god.
I'm going to get in trouble for that. It's a good thing Ryan doesn't listen to this. Ryan would send me angry DMs for that one.
Angry DMs, emails, everything. I'm telling them.
No, don't. Oh no, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble now.
Oh no.
So I actually, it's weird, for a good part of this episode, I was actually not feeling the Songmin hype.
Oh no.
Because
the
first thing he does is he grabs Sungyu and runs off, and he starts talking about, like, oh, like, we, you know, you need to, obviously, you need to avoid division and subtraction signs, right? Because, like, Sungyu, he's used to having to explain things to him, even though a lot of the time he's explaining things he shouldn't and maybe being a little patronizing. Which, you know, same, relatable. And he's talking about, like, oh, division and subtraction, these are like people you should never meet. And then he's like, oh, but like, you have 9 garnets, and I have 9 garnets, 9 and 9 have met, it's fate. And it's just like, you're reaching a little too hard here, buddy. It doesn't flow as naturally as usual bullshit.
Yes, he's officially crossed the line into, like, trying a little hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so I was not as into it in this part, and then he goes out to do a practice run of the card game, and he gets a negative 8. He kind of just eats shit, and so everyone sort of
Songmin in the practice game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he got the negative 8, and so everyone's like, oh god, okay, this game, there has to be a way to make this game more than just pure luck. There's no way this game is just pure luck. So everybody splits off, and we get the alliance of everyone but Poong and Jinho trying to figure this out. And they're sort of talking and figuring things out. And Poong walks in, and Songmin's like, oh, sorry, you can't, we're just playing some practicing, and I'm showing them some strats. And Poong's like, oh, okay, I'll watch some strats. And Songmin's like, you have to pay me a garnet. If you want to hang out, you have to pay me.
It's like elementary school. Like, you got to give me a quarter if you want to hang out at our Citadel.
It's very good. And Sungyu slips out the back door as they're arguing about this garnet fee for watching. And what do you feel about, like, overall, what do you feel about, like, people's strategies this game?
I think, it's kind of cool because we don't longer have, like, an even 50-50 team split.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the Jinho Alliance versus other.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is working together to split the points evenly. Which kind of leads to it not feeling... Like, I don't like it when the show feels like it's one team versus another team. I like everyone versus everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the smaller the cast gets, the better that... Like, the more likely that is to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But a bunch of people sitting in a room and being like, don't tell the guy. It just feels weird because it's like you're all on a TV show. Like, I don't know what the point of, like, withholding, like, trying to be sneaky is. It's very funny, for example, to see Songmin put his foot on the door and hold the door closed. Mm-hmm. It's very funny.
It is.
But, like, I don't know. It feels, like, weird. It's, like, childish. It's, like, wait, I don't know. Like, sometimes the show wants to portray the contestants as, like, smart adults who are, like, clever and crafty. And then sometimes it's, like, we're all a bunch of gremlins in a house trying to fuck each other over. And I like both of those, but I can't. I don't, like... I think it waffles sometimes.
It feels like it's a really hard balance to strike, and not just on the part of the show, but on the players. I mean, like, there's this, like... I feel like there's this unspoken level of, like, politeness and manners where, like, if someone walks into the room, like, you can't just be like, go away. You know? You can be like, oh, right. Sorry, we were kind of in the middle of something, and they're usually like, oh, that's fine, I'll watch. And you're like, I'm trying to get you to leave.
So I can say bad things about you.
Yeah, I mean, we've had instances of alliances, like, sitting in a room and making a plan, and the enemy walks in. And they're like, can you leave? And they're like, no, I think we'll hang out. And they're like, okay, we'll go to a different room. And then the bad guys follow them. And it's like,
right,
guys, can we please grow up? Like, I understand their efforts. And, like, Songmin holding the door with his foot, like, especially the way he chose to do it, that seemed a little theatric and hilarious. But, like, it is a game of information, right? Like, they figure out something that Jinho has not figured out. And it's like, they have to keep
their game benefit to not tell him.
Right, they have to keep that information safe. That's the only way they can win. So that's actually what they figure out, is that Sungyu, while all this happening, is slips out and buys a 2 and a 3 garnet pack of cards, and realizes that the backs of the cards are different colors.
That's a fun. That's the shit I love on The Genius. Is when people, like, realize rules about the game that weren't stated to them,
mm-hmm.
or tricks to the game, and it's, like, so fun to see that happen. Like, you and I, when we saw it, were like, like, that's so cool.
Yeah. It was a really good moment.
Like, I obviously, I've mentioned before, I love the character stuff, and it's really funny to me, but, like, at the end of the day, I'm watching this for the, like, I want the games to be interesting,
mm-hmm.
and, like, seeing him realize that the cards are different colors, or the packs are different colors, is, like, really cool.
I think I have two contestants for my favorite moment this episode. And my first is right here, which is where everybody comes in to sort of talk to Sungyu, and they're like, oh, Sungyu, like, you know, we need to figure this out. And he's like, oh, I don't know if I need an alliance this game. And then Yunji's like, hey, what's up with your cards? Wait, what is that on the back of your cards? And Sungyu just, like, is like, ah, fucking, oh, I was gonna do a thing. And, like, it cuts to, like, a confessional of him. She's like, he's like, oh, this lady, is she an Aries? I don't get along with Aries. Oh. And then she, like, runs off to tell everyone else, and he literally, like, grabs her by the shoulder and hauls her back. And is like, listen, you have to stop. And they're like,
be cool.
And he's and everybody rushes in and is like, wait, what's going on? And Sungyu's like, ah, I figured out a way to win. And Songmin's like, and like gives this huge smile and high fives him. And Sung, you won't even look up as he gives the high five. He's just so fucking bummed. It's just like, oh, Sung, you. Both Songmin like so stoked that his Hubei came through for him, and Sung Yu so bummed that he wanted to be a rogue agent and no one would let him. Is both.
I was gonna be cool.
I was gonna do a thing, you guys.
Well, because then it ends up being, it doesn't end up being Sung Yu who is the cool rogue agent.
Mm-hmm. No,
like everyone's trying to be that person, but it's ultimately. Another strategy entirely that gets somebody a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then, so Songmin basically is just like, oh, okay, great. Now we're all five in alliance and we'll all buy cards and we'll all, like, create a big pool like it's Magic the Gathering and we can all build our own decks out of this big pool of cards. Does anyone have any, like, blue cards? I'm building a blue themed deck. You know?
I'm making a land deck. This is my land deck.
I used to have a deck that was based on healing and fire, so it was white and red, and I called it Strawberries and Cream.
You are very cool. Like, I've tried to get into Magic before, not like really seriously, but Magic is always like serious stuff, and I really appreciate Strawberries and Cream.
It was a good deck. I mean, it wasn't a very good deck. I built it out of people's leftovers. I wasn't going to pay for the cards, but.
Do you still play Magic?
Oh God, no.
This the reason I ask is this game made me think a lot about CCGs, and there was a brief moment during the episode where I was like, should I get into a CCG? And then you were like, you could get into Netrunner, and I was like, and I had like a bunch of tabs open, and then I like the honeymoon period was over, and I was like, no, I mustn't.
I mean, like, if you wanted to get into Netrunner together, I would do that with you, Alan. Netrunner always seemed cool to me, but like, I don't know, I feel like there's an element to CCGs where like. I feel like it's best played in person. I really value the physicality. And it's like, I made a bunch of friends in the Midwest, and then I moved to California. And then I made a bunch of friends on the East Coast while I was in California. And guess what? It's very hard to play card games with them. So.
I was going to make a joke about being in, like, a fictional city and being like, well, you should just come down to Bloopity Bloop City. But,
Where the grass is green and the girls are pretty.
Yes. But now everyone knows where we live, so alas.
Yeah. Bloopity bloop. This is a good bit. We should probably keep this going.
For sure. What else happens in the episode?
So after they've figured out this whole strategy, Jin-ho walks in and is like, what are you guys doing? And Songmin tries to cover it up and is like, oh, we were just talking about alliances. And Sung-yu is still so bummed. And he's just like, what's Sung-yu's problem? He's like, oh, he's just worried about strategies. It's just like... it's extremely good.
Strategy worries.
And so they're going to build their decks in private using these card backing things that they've figured out. And Songmin's like, okay, Sung-yu, me and you have to run interference and keep Jin-ho from figuring out what's going on. So it's a two-step plan. The first step is stop using honorifics for Jin-ho and Pung, which just seems spiteful.
It's just mean. It totally is just mean.
Yeah, and like, but like, Sung-yu goes for it so hard. Like, Songmin's like, hey, why don't we not use honorifics for them? And Sung-yu's like, yeah, why? I'm actually offended. Why should I give them honorifics? It's like, whoa.
This whole language works with honorifics. Like, what are you doing?
Just brutal. And then part two of the plan is Songmin and Sung-yu taking turns with Jin-ho, like, sitting in the two chairs in the bedroom, talking about literally nothing. Like, Songmin is up first, and he's just sitting there talking about this concert he had once, and Jin-ho's like, huh, I mean, that's interesting, but we are kind of short on time, so could we talk about the strategy? And Songmin's like, yeah, I'm getting there. So there were 30,000 people there, and we were on this helicopter, and I went, wah! Like, that's literally what he says. And Jin-ho's just like, what the fuck is going on?
What? My time.
And Sung-yu, like, tries to stall him a bit and talks about some stuff with him. And they trade off again. And finally, they trade in Sung-yu, and Sung-yu just sits down and folds his hands and literally has run out of things to say. And Jin-ho's just looking around incredulously, like, what is happening?
The emotech says, like, nothing to say.
It's just, ugh. It's so good. And then so finally, like, Jin-ho's like, okay, you literally aren't even saying anything. I'm gonna go in that room. And Sung-yu's like, no. There's nothing to see here. It's no,
no, Jinho, you can't.
And then he gets, like, physical.
Yeah, he, like, grabs him and starts hauling away, like, you can't go in there. Which, on the one hand, I don't know that I approve of the physicality, but also I feel like there needs to be some recourse for people just walking in on you, you know? Like, no, they're doing planes in there, and you're not allowed in. Go away.
Right, if you're going to be the bodyguard of the scene, then you have to move someone physically if they're not listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true.
And also, I felt like, especially the Sung-yu's performance there, really. Do you ever see Clue, the Tim Curry movie?
No.
Oh. No. There's a part of that where there's a cop that comes to the house, and he's, like, walking around, and they're sort of giving him a tour and avoiding one room in particular where there are a bunch of dead bodies. And he goes to see, like, he's like, all right, well, that's the entire house. And the cop's like, wait, what's in that room? It's like, oh, nothing. It's like, no, I want to see what's in there. And he's like, oh, no, you really can't. It's a private space. Mr. Green is, like, insisting. And he, like rushes in front of him. And he's like, you can't. It's all too shocking. And he just gets thrown out of the way. It just felt very, very much like Clue to me, which is a good movie. You should watch that sometime.
I know. That's one of those movies that as soon as the first person I knew watched it, they were like, you gotta watch this with friends. And I was like, I don't have friends.
You have friends now. You have friends now.
I know, but I need to like make friends that'll watch movies with me.
Yeah, I won't do that.
I know.
I don't like you enough for that.
I know.
Okay.
Anyways, what else happens in the game? We like each other, listener, I swear.
So we get to the actual game part of the game where it's time for everybody to turn in their decks and it's time to duel. Let's go, Yugi. It's time to duel. Kaito.
This part felt very CCG to me where everyone's just like buying card packs and like getting high value cards. And I was like, yeah, they just like I'm constantly impressed by how the games manage to emulate what they are supposed to allude to.
Mm-hmm.
Like the politics game feels like real politics and the poverty game is like actual economics, and then like this is how trading cards game or how CCGs work is like you buy card packs and hopefully you get lucky enough that you get enough high value ones that you can make a deck out of all high value things that play well together.
But you also get like people like having like you see to not to as much of an extent as a proper CCG, but like you see deck concepts, right? You're like, oh, this person's concept is I have multipliers and they're all of this one suit and I have numbers over here, right? Or, like, this person is like, I wanted as many high numbers as possible, and I was willing to sacrifice the predictability of card backs for it, right?
Right, exactly. And it's really cool, because you get to see, like, you get to have us watching the episode being like, oh, that's a good deck. That's a shitty deck. That deck's not going to work. That's a luck deck,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Yeah.
It's really fun to watch.
So, the one thing, like, if you haven't watched this, if you haven't watched this episode and are listening to this podcast, which is a strange choice, but we endorse it. Live your best life. The thing to keep an eye on here is the way the dealers are shuffling the cards. It's not like a normal, like Las Vegas, like, you know, poker, like, card shuffle. They're doing this weird sort of, like, end-over-end shuffle that doesn't ever affect the way the cards are angled.
Yeah, it's a horizontal shuffle.
Right, and so they're, like, preserving how you have positioned the cards, which is going to be important shortly. So Yinji's
when we drop some hot nuclear fire on you,
indeed,
sorry.
Indeed. I mean, you know, they already know. We already told them what Jinho did, but you know.
Oh right.
So Yunji's deck is up first, and it's a strong, like easy to read deck, and she ends up with a score of 4,032, which is a pretty solid score.
Yeah, that seems like a high score when you first start watching this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, their preview scores. Like, okay, so Songmin got a -8. And when they're showing off the rules of the game, they're like, this person won. They had a 9. And you're like, all right. So, yeah, 4,000 is like, oh, damn. Kyungran's up next, and her deck is a little messier, right?
Uh-huh.
It's got a lot of high numbers, but there are some plus signs in there that like could really break up all her multipliers. And she goes in and she plays, and like it's pretty tense. It's a good moment, but she ends up with a score of 15,552.
Oofa doofa.
Yeah, quite a spicy one. I call that a spicy
deck. I mean, don't they don't they say at one point, like, they calculate what the maximum potential points is, and it's like if you get all high value cards and all multipliers at the right places, you can get like over like 800,000 points or something.
I think it is 100,000 on the nose, because you can theoretically get like 5 tens, I think.
So yeah, about 100,000. So you know that's like your upper limit, and everything around and everything less than that is like in line with what you expect people to get.
Mm-hmm. Sungyu's deck looks like the biggest mess so far.
Yes.
He's got plus signs in a couple of different colors. There's like a cutback to earlier when they're building decks, and he's like, we're out of multipliers? And they're like, I'll just take some pluses. It'll be fine. And he looks unhappy, but does so.
That's like an Arrested Development cut, where it's like, have you watched Arrested Development?
A long time ago I watched some, yeah.
Basically, somebody will say something that's like, oh, this is going to go fine, and then they cut back, and that's where the Ron Howard voice came from.
Yeah.
Where it's like Ron Howard voice goes, it was not fine.
Yeah, no, that is definitely that, because he plays, and the plus signs, he had to put in two plus signs because he ran out of other cards, and both of them come up, and because of it, he gets a score of 128.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, pretty bad compared to everything we've seen so far. Songmin is up next. His deck looks really solid, looks really consistent and predictable. And he has a little bit of bad luck with numbers, ends up with a score of 9,720.
Still a good score.
Yeah, yeah. Yurim's deck seems all right, but she's got some of those plus signs in there that could really trip her up. And her showdown is probably the most stressful. Because she,
yes, that's what I wrote here. Yep.
She just keeps getting like the plus signs will come up, or there's like some, you know, number ambush stuff, and she ends up in a situation where it's like, okay, I have two cards left. One of them is guaranteed. The one I have right now is guaranteed to be a multiplier. If I play that, that's not great. But the next card is either a plus sign or a number. If it's a plus sign, I'm screwed. If it's a number, I'm okay. And she sort of stands there for a second, and she like pauses and like takes like walks in a circle and then walks a loop away from the table, just like you know, like stressing out, and comes back and is like, I have to, like, she's a pool player, you know, she's a professional, like, there's a level to pool that is gambling, right?
Right, it's gambling and hoping that a thing you do now will pay off in a couple plays later. You know?
Mm-hmm. And so she was like, "No, I've got to gamble on this. I've got to gamble on this last card." And so she goes for it, and she's like, "Go ahead." And as the dealer's reaching for the card, she's like, "Wait, do it, but I can't watch. I can't watch." And she like covers her eyes and turns away, and she ends up with a score of 493. It turned out okay, not good, but she saves herself.
And so you're like, okay, everybody is doing their best to come up with good decks, but a lot of it is still coming down to luck.
Mm-hmm. And there's,
which I'm hit or miss with in terms of like the games I like in the Genius are not always luck based, mm-hmm. but yeah. It's fine. You're like, okay, we're all in like relatively even footing. The scores are spread nicely.
Uh huh. And then Jinho lays out his deck, and you're like, oh, like, well, first off, you see it's all black and blue cards. It's mostly black cards, some blue, and you're like, huh. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe the blues are just multipliers and the rest are just numbers. And then he shows you his deck, and it's like, no, the multipliers are everywhere. He can't rely on color at all. And you're like, so why is...
What's his game?
Right, here? Exactly. And then he starts playing, and he is just, like, unblinking, like pass, pass, you know, and then, like no, open, open, pass, just, like, no hesitation, no uncertainty.
Like a robot, just like an android.
And he's getting exactly what he wants on every flip. And the cast is just sitting there like, the rest of the players are just like, what is happening? And like, Kyungran's like, oh, I figured it out. The black ones are the multipliers. And he flips a black and it's a seven. And she's like, the fuck?
What is he doing?
And this is when he reveals that, yeah, the back of the cards aren't horizontally symmetrical. They are covered with a bunch of tiny images of garnets. And if you like flip the cards, you can tell, like, you could flip one and be like, oh, that card is upside down, that means it must be this because I flipped all these ones upside down or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with that trick, he gets a score of 35,840.
My man.
It's a,
unbelievable.
It's a like he, damn
like,
good trick.
I was guessing, sorry to cut you off. Mm-hmm. I was guessing this whole time. I'm like, oh, he must have marked them or like ear bent them, or there's got to be something physically on the cards that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's as simple as the game has set up a way for you to identify the cards easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not cheating, like I said, because it's right there. He didn't add anything to him. Mm-hmm. Like, you could argue if he marked the cards, like, yeah, they didn't say it in the rules, but he did it, and that's frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
Like card counting in blackjack. You're technically allowed to do it, but you're going to get kicked out of a casino if you do it a lot. He would get in trouble, probably, if he marked cards. But this is just like, no, I'm using my eyes. Like, I'm using my eyes and my brain.
Mm-hmm. And this one, like, when we were watching together, I was like, I was like, if this was me, I would mark the back of the cards. And I paused for a moment. I was like, you almost certainly can't do that. Like, I would... Any time I suggest an idea on the show or when we're watching, I'm not just saying, like, I would do this thing. It's like I would find a dealer in private and be like, is this against the rules? Because they'll tell you. That's what they're there for. And I'm pretty sure in that instance they'd be like, no, you cannot mark the cards. I'd be like, fuck. Well, I guess I'm going to play poker because apparently I'm so good at poker. That went so well for me that time we played poker, didn't it? Didn't it, Alan?
It did. You're very good at poker. I'm also just good at being a machine of chaos.
Was when you said you're very good at poker with that tone of voice, were you making fun of my poker voice?
Me, just now?
Yeah.
No, what? No. Oh, God, I don't know how to turn off the sarcasm. No, I'm not. I'm never sarcastic.
All right.
I'm never mocking. You told me to make a Tekken joke on this episode.
I don't even remember why.
I don't know. I literally wrote in bold here, make the Tekken joke on the episode.
It was a good Tekken joke. We made it while we were watching, and then we were like, we should make that again on the air, great. And we have no idea what it was.
Oh, betrayal, throwing somebody into a volcano.
Oh, right.
Hihachi.
Okay, yeah, we haven't gotten there yet, but... Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I'll cut that out. Maybe I won't. Is it funnier if I don't?
I don't know. It's up to you. You're the Lord Editor.
So next up is Pung, and the question that we both had is like, okay, so his deck is high value, but it doesn't have any good organization as far as card backs, and Pung's like, I'm just relying on luck. And you're like, is that true, or did Jinho teach him the trick? And immediately, like, oh no. No, Jinho did not teach him the trick.
This guy doesn't know shit.
Yeah, he's just fucking up left and right. Some plus sign ambushes, he ends up with a score of 128, which is tied with Sungyu for last place.
Damn. Who would have thunk a tie would happen?
Right. I mean, I guess mathematically
it's like not the show is scripted.
Possible. I'm just going to walk past that one. And so Jinho wins, and he gets to decide who goes to the DM between Pung and Sungyu. It's like, okay. And they're hyping it up, right? They're doing, like, you know, like the music's rising, and they're doing the quick cuts. And it's like, why are you fucking prolonging this? Pung is his ally. He's going to pick Sungyu. And
obviously.
And then he picks Pung. And you're like, wait, what?
What?
And it cuts back to like, Jinho being, like, talking to Pung. And he's like, I don't know when this happened. But he's like, listen, like, you know, I don't know. If I win, like, I think I'll pick you for the DM. He's like, what happened to me is I went to the DM and I came out stronger. And I have this feeling that, like, this is what you really need to wake up, like, your senses and really open you up to the game. Hihachi Volcano. There we go.
There it is. We brought it home.
Yeah.
This is the source of my favorite scene of the episode.
Is it?
It's when they're picking who to go to the. It's when they're picking who's going to go to the DM.
Tell me about it.
And well, he does the duck duck goose thing, where it's like Jinho has suddenly become like a cartoon anime villain or something. Where he's like, "Who am I gonna pick?
Oh, that's Pung.
You." It's Pung, I'm sorry. Yeah. Who am I going to pick? You? Or could it be you? Or you? And he's, like, touching everybody's shoulders, and they're all like, I don't want to. And then who does he pick first? I mean, he's like, he picks Yurim.
I think he...
Or he suggests.
No, he first picks Yunji, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Yunji's just like, no, I don't want to. And he's like...
I don't want to.
She's like, yes, sir, it'll be fun. And she's like, no, I really don't want to.
I super don't want to.
And he just sort of like, he just looks kind of at a loss for a minute there, like, He's like,
well, shit.
I really think it'll be fun, though.
Please.
Fucking Pung. I usually I feel like a kinship to people being kind of awkward losers, but I can't just, I just have to laugh at Poong on this one. It's just such
Six, you aren't the awkward loser of the show. You're the songman. You're the like theatrical genius.
I'm the lunatic, and that's, you know, that's fair.
Are you the Gura?
I don't think I pout as much. I pout a little. I pout a little. Sometimes people make some references that make me pout.
Which Spice Girl are you?
I'm definitely I'm probably Sporty.
Not Scary Spice?
No, she's cooler than I am.
That's unfair. Again, you just sell yourself so short.
It's literally a Spice Girl. You cannot say I'm cooler than a Spice Girl unless you're talking about Posh, who is actually not cool.
Okay, on three, which Spice Girl would I be? And we can't, I'm positive we're going to get this on the same one. Ready? One, two, three, Baby Spice.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Yeah, no shit.
I'm proud. I'm happy for it myself.
Oh.
But here we are. We're in the DM.
Well, we're not actually.
Oh.
Because first, we have to tackle some homework.
Homework.
Why do you always do like a telegrammy thing? Like this, you know, like fresh off the front lines.
But because it's the front lines of homework. I don't know, Six. It's just a bit that I've stuck with and I can't get out of it now. And here's where we are.
The boys have pressed past Normandy and they're ready to siege the German I don't know German World War II history very well.
You had a bit, and then you...
I second-guessed myself and also didn't have the necessary knowledge.
Cook, serve, delicious, too.
Indeed. So I made you play Cook, Serve, Delicious, too.
You did.
You have experience with the first, do you not?
Yes, I played the first one probably the year it came out, like 2015 or something, on the iPad, which is a fun way to play those games. For those who don't know, Cook, Serve, Delicious is a pair of games, indie games, that are, I kind of would describe as like a rhythm cooking game,
mm-hmm.
or a cooking rhythm game, I guess, because the cooking takes precedence, where you play as a chef who's trying to run a successful restaurant, and you work your way up through these different days of working at the restaurant, and you buy equipment and furniture and, most importantly, different dishes. And the way it differentiates itself from like a Diner Dash or something is, instead of like, you're just playing the chef, you're not playing a waiter, so you just cook
and then you serve it, and it's delicious.
Hopefully you get the sideways yellow smiley faces and not the blue, like, I hated this so much I could vomit faces.
Oh, those are the red ones. The red ones, well, so there's like the yellow good job smiley faces, there's the blue meh face, and then there's the red, like, I'm going to fucking kill you face.
And you just have infinite waves of people coming at infinite speed until the day is over. And the sequel continues that. I want to start by saying I really like the plot setup for this.
Yeah?
Because it's definitely a sequel. Like, most of these games of this type don't have to have, like, a plot reason for the sequel to exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, we're back at it again. Like, Flo's opening a new diner. But this game is like, no, you did it. You, like, became the best chef in the world. And then your company got bought out.
Yep.
Or the company that runs the restaurant that you work in.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still a good chef and you still have all these people. But you have to start from zero again because you need a new place. So here we go. And it kind of makes you into a, like, mercenary chef where you can work at all these different places while accruing dishes for your own place. Which is a cool setup.
I feel like that gives it, like, you can still do your own place. And I don't feel like, it gives it a very different feel to the second game because it's way more about these, like, you know, like, there's still some, like, some randomization as far as, like, when customers arrive and what they want. But, like, it's these preset menus that you're cooking that are sort of themed, and it's bizarrely, Cook, Serve, Delicious 2 has a ton of lore.
Yeah.
And the lore is absurd. It's talking about, like, the Great War of Indiana in 1955, where they decided that bagels were no longer bread. Like, it's all insane nonsense. But, like, every item, every food, every restaurant has a ridiculous, like, multi-paragraph description of how it ties into their bizarre world. I don't know. How did you feel about this change in, like, tone and, like, style.
I mean, I think it fits because it seems like the thing that they wanted was just put in more of everything, like way more types of food and way more, instead of like hinting at a big world like the first game did with like the emails and stuff, it's just like, no, it's all there. And it's just like walls of text for you to, like, they just put a Mass Effect codex in a cooking game
mm-hmm.
for you to engage with as you want. Like, I just appreciate that none of it was mandatory. I, like, spent my last 30 or 40 minutes with it just, like, skimming some of that stuff to get a basic understanding of it. But I didn't engage with it that much. I didn't, because I'm glad, really glad I didn't have to.
Yeah.
I think this game with, like, long cutscenes would have been terrible. But the different restaurants thing, definitely, and having them be, like, fixed menus, I like that because it forces you to adjust to a certain pace. And just do it over and over and again for several days with different tasks, and then completely like pull the rug out from under you without you having to. Like, the only way to change the game up in Cookstar Delicious 1 was to buy new food.
Mm-hmm.
But this game is like, no, most of the different like complicated foods are available at the different restaurants. You just have to switch restaurants and then work a couple days at this one and learn how does it work to make like French fries and hot dogs, and then over here it's like, how do you make a steak and fish dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the game gives you the variety without you having to work as hard for it, which I think is exactly what it needed.
Yeah, and it's also, like, so Cookstar Delicious 2 has, I believe, over 180 foods. And the first one had 30.
Wow.
And so, like, in the first game, I made it all the way to, like, so there's, you know, you start off as a zero-star restaurant, you work your way up, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 5 platinum. I made it all the way to 5 platinum, and part of the way I did that is habits I built, right? It's like, oh, there's this huge menu. These are the 8 things that I will ever have on my menu. I'm always going to have fish. Fish is so easy. I'm so used to doing fish. I can bang it out so fast, right? And they became like these crutches for me. And in Cook Serve Delicious 2, it's just all these preset levels, and it's like, well, I've got a gold on this level. I'm not doing it again. Let me load up this level where my food is, like, sushi, okonomiyaki, and, like, soy corn cobs. And it's like, I don't know how to do any of this.
Everything you knew is different now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, I mean, you could learn the 30 foods even if you wanted to. If there was some, I don't know if there was a mode in the first game that was, like, an all dishes menu or something.
I don't think there is.
All dishes endless mode would actually be super fun. If you could put that on like medium difficulty and just do a stream where the day never ends and you get all the foods, that'd be kind of cool. But with this many dishes, you can't possibly learn everything. You just have to play within the realm of having like, what is it, 3 or 4 dishes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But what really entices me about this series is just how quickly you get into a flow state with it. Like, yeah. the feedback loop of like you knowing how to make a dish once or twice is fun. It's like an interesting challenge, but as soon as it becomes muscle memory, the game really like sits comfortably where it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend like these 10 minutes just in a complete fugue state of like, I just fish, I can do without even looking. It's like up, down, left, right, X, Z, sanitize, enter. And because you told me like play this game with a keyboard because we're playing it on PC.
Mm-hmm.
And even just in like 2 or 3 days, I had memorized the first restaurant's menu and could practically do it with my eyes closed. And it was very satisfying to be able to do that.
Because
mm-hmm. They put a lot of shorthands to make that easy for you. Like if you're making burgers, for example, all of the condiments for the burgers are placed by pressing the first letter of the condiment. And if there is overlap, then it's the second letter of the second most important one.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like, bacon and blue cheese, like blue cheese will be L because you're more likely to get bacon, so bacon will be B, and you can just kind of like instinctively know that and start doing that and like realize the game's rules before they even present themselves to you.
And you can also like completely customize the controls. You can customize the hotkeys on every single food individually if you want to.
Yeah, I imagine there's somebody out there who found some like ninja way of putting it on like the side buttons of a mouse, and they can just play this game at hyperspeed because there's no input delay either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just as fast as you can do in input things. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I should actually... I streamed it before. I should probably do it again. It was really fun. It's really... Like, it's one of those games also that does such a great job of putting you into... Like, there's the fugue state, and then there's the panic, right? Because...
Yeah.
as in a real restaurant, like they're like noon and 6 p.m. are rush hours in Cook Serve Delicious. And what happens is like customers just start flooding in, and basically any time there's an empty like seat, it is immediately taken and there's a new order. And it's just like, it's like you're drowning sometimes, right? It's just like, oh, the orders are coming in so fast, and you're sending in like, you start, it's, you get a little bit of that fugue state because it's pushing you past your limits, and you're like, I didn't even read the ticket. I'm just hitting keys. And it's like, no, subconsciously you did read the ticket. You got it right. Good job. Or you didn't, and you're just fucking panicking and flailing and you die.
And you're like, I forget how to make a hot dog.
do you use the, oh no, I put like relish on this hot dog 3 times and then dumped it in the trash. Oh.
It's so that. It's so like the, there's, I don't know if you ever watched SpongeBob, but there's like an episode where he like, he's a hamburger chef, and he like forgets how to make hamburgers, and he like has to relearn the process. So he's just like, burger, lettuce, my hand, and then mayonnaise, and then tomato on top. And he's like, no, that's wrong. Like, it's 100% that when you're in the panic mode. I think the panic mode actually reminds me a lot of my job, because I work a very fast-paced job, and I didn't have this job when I played the first game, but playing it now, I'm just like, oh, the way that your brain has to go like, okay, everything looks like it's falling apart right now, but realistically, if I take it one task at a time and approach the next closest deadline, I can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit the end of the day and it says like zero misses, and you're like, oh, somehow that worked out. Like, the game obviously gets faster and you have to get better at that, but it's all doable. It doesn't feel like you actually have to have 7 hands. You just need to know how to prioritize things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And I really like that about it. One of the mechanics that they added, it's kind of like the biggest mechanical change of the like cooking part, is the holding stations.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically, instead of just having the 6 tables where people request food or there are chores for you to do, you also have several holding stations at the top where you can batch prepare certain meals, so that as soon as somebody wants them, they're already cooked and prepared. And then you just have to put whatever's on top of them, and then they're served instantly. And the idea is that saves you time, and it gives you something to do in the quiet periods.
Mm-hmm.
But I had trouble like knowing when to do that and when I needed to like. I just started like forgetting to do it entirely.
Yeah, and like there's certain like that's definitely a threat, especially during rush hours. But like there are certain items where, so there are two things I'll tell you, and these will also be like hot tips for anyone who's going to play the game. So. First off, there are two types of holding station items. The ones that are in red, you have to put them in a holding station. You can't make them normally. And there's the yellow ones where holding stations are optional. But the thing is, when you drop something in a holding station as it's cooking, that refreshes the timer. So let's say someone came in and asked for a burger, and you don't have any burgers made, right?
Yeah.
And the thing starts to go down. They start to lose patience because they're like, where's my burger? And it starts draining. You could, obviously, burgers are yellow. You could just make it to order. Or you could prep some in the holding station. And when you drop that order in the holding station to start cooking, their patience will refresh. They're like, oh, you're working on it. Okay.
Yeah, knowing that you're working on it will set it back to zero, which is really, that's actually really clutch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's just a lot of smart tweaks along that angle. But there is like, when I picked this for you, I was like, hey, have you played Cook Serve Delicious 1? Because it's actually, I don't know, because I played the shit out of the first one, but I feel like it would actually be kind of hard to just go straight into Cook Serve Delicious 2. There's kind of a lot to keep track of.
Well, it starts out fast. It does not start out slow. I think the first game definitely started, I remember it starting out a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of like this game has a very good tutorial. It actually even like tells you, hey, each part of this tutorial we're estimated will take you this long, because they know that people have like short patience. But they onboard you with that stuff really well. And then as soon as they're like, all right, go to your first day, you have no help.
Mm-hmm.
And I can totally imagine that being very scary to someone who hasn't played the first one.
Yeah.
Just to get a basic understanding of the way you're supposed to like think and play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly. You just can't, like, I could tell you how to, like, what they do is they tell you, hey, here's how to cook the basic meals, and here's how to do the basic chores, but they don't tell you how fast you need to be able to do that until you're in it, and you don't want to, like, fail. It'll suck to play this game and just fail the first 5 days over and over again, because you can't get good at it.
Right.
Yet.
Like, when I played it for the first time, I played it. This game has had a pretty steady release of content. They've been adding new content. They've been making the tutorial better. When it first came out, there was not very much of a tutorial. They didn't explain holding stations. I was very confused.
What?
I mean, the game came out pretty hot.
Yeah.
But I think they've really gotten there, and they're going to keep adding things. There's a new expansion coming this summer for free as a thank you that's adding, I think, like 20 more foods and some new stuff, more levels. Great stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, the developer's always been really good about supporting these games. Do you have anything else?
Not particularly. I thought it was really fun. I'd like to play more of it. I'd only played about the first hour or so just to get a feel for the couple of restaurants that you have unlocked at first, mm-hmm. but I definitely want to try it the next time I'm just looking for something to fall to, like, drop an hour into.
I really like peek behind the curtain. I really like to play it with the sound off while I'm editing a podcast.
Yeah, it makes time go by really fast.
It does. And you just sort of, like, you just listen to the podcast and listen for anything you need to change and just hammer away, and then when you hear something, you immediately pause, you tab over, you fix it. So before you tell me whether or not we got a Garnet for this one, and by we I mean I, it's the royal we, so this is a new system that I'm going to suggest and we'll talk about live on air. As before, as with the possible change to how Jin Hoeing works, this change wouldn't take an effect this episode because that's unfair, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering if, first of all, we should have it be multiple Garnets, because one Garnet doesn't really matter with the way the economy has shaken out.
Not anymore, at least, yeah.
And then, two, if there should be, like, a scale? Because, like, okay, so, I don't, like, when you had me read Murders in the Rue Morgue, right?
Yeah.
That was not something I would have read on my own. And that was correct. Really interesting. And so, like, if it was an out of five, I would give that, like, a four or something, right? Because, like, I wouldn't have found that on my own. But, like, Cooks Are Delicious, too, like, I think it sounds like you liked it. I'm glad you did. I thought you would. But it's also not, like, really stretching your horizons here, right? It's not like, check out this new thing you've never seen before. It's completely mind-blowing. So I imagine I would get a fairly low rating on this one because I'm not really expanding your horizons.
Right. And I played the first one, and I would have probably played this one if I remembered that it came out, you know?
Right. So I think we want to discourage, like, safe bets. If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, because, well, the whole point of this homework thing is to get each other out of our comfort zones and to try things that we haven't tried before. Like, that's at least how I've envisioned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
So with all that said, we're not doing that this time. But
we will instate that for the next game.
We'll talk about it off air, but I'm just pitching that right now. And on air, listeners, we might end up doing that. Al and I will talk off air and figure out what we want to do. But for this episode, do I win homework?
Yes, you do.
Great. That's exciting. I am pleased to win homework. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So, with all that said, are you ready to talk about the death match?
The meth batch?
Sure. The meth batch.
That's the one. Yeah, let's bring it on.
All right. Alan, what is our deathmatch this week?
The deathmatch this week is Indian Poker, yet again. Ding, ding, ding. It's the best game. The best game .club.
Do you feel as strongly about it this time?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
I thought this one was good. This deathmatch immediately has the problem of one of the players doesn't know how to play the game very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, like, me anytime we play any game, so it was kind of weird that they did, like, a weird callback to the Garnet wager, but I guess that's just forward thinking of them. It's about 6 years into the future. Who's in this deathmatch, first of all?
This deathmatch is Pung versus Yunji. Even though she said she didn't want to, and in fact it didn't sound fun to her, she was ultimately forced in.
Right, I think it would have been weird if you could just say no and not have to do it.
Yeah.
That'd be really broke.
And I mean, I think there's an element of social pressure in this game, in this show so far, where it's like, if you seem unhappy enough about something, people will back off, but you can't do it with this. That just doesn't, that makes the game not work. So.
Yeah. So it's Yunjin Pung, and Yunjin doesn't really know how to play this Indian poker game, or at least like knows the rules, but doesn't. I think what we talked about watching was she misses like the etiquette of what you're supposed to say and do as you're playing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same as before. You get a card from the dealer, you put it on your head. That is your opponent's card. Your opponent has to, like with poker, decide if they want to bet or fold on their card, and then try to get you basically through poker and mind games and eye contact, have you decide whether or not you're going to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, there are no, it's all number cards, no face cards. And so it's just highest number wins. And then there's like little sub rules, like if you fold a 10, you have to lose automatically. And ace is obviously high. And I forget what's the other special rule. Is there another special rule?
If you tie, the chips carry over.
Yes. Well, yeah, pretty much. So things are going fine. But the issue immediately is that Yunji means to, like, I think she means to hold, but because she doesn't say something like "I will hold" and hold your number of chips, it is interpreted as folding.
Yeah.
And then she looks down, and the dealer is like, "You folded," and she's like, "Wait, why? I wanted to play." And then she would have won, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like,
and the dealer is like, "You didn't say it."
Yeah. She didn't say it. And also, like, well, so Pung raised her, and she doesn't put chips in, and she just says "Okay," and then puts her card down, and like, no, I mean, like. I understand how she got there, but also anyone who's ever played any of these games would be like, "Oh, she folded."
Right.
So, yeah, it's an unfortunate misunderstanding. But I feel like also, like, frankly, they're both terrible at this. It was kind of a like I didn't like this DM very much because it felt like a race to the bottom to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where like both of them were doing like really basic mind games. Yoram did some, or not Yoram, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yoram would never do this. Yoram's great.
Yoram is perfect.
Yunji did some all-ins, which is like, I don't know if you know much about poker, but like, amateurs go all-in, right? It's very rare, yeah, for like really like serious players to go all-in. It's just sort of like,
even if you know 100% that you're gonna win, you should not go all-in.
Because it's such a blunt, inelegant move. Because it's like, okay, if you know you're gonna win, then you should string them along because you're like, you're more likely to get more chips out of them if you gradually raise it up. All-in scare people, right. It makes them want to fold. But then also, if you're bluffing, then it's like, it's a bluff that's really going to cost you if you're wrong. And it's also just so, like, obvious because it's just so blunt. It's just a bad tool to use in generally. And if folks out there who are better at poker than me, at @6detmar on Twitter, I would be happy to hear about poker theory and why I'm wrong about this. Please be respectful, but I think it's an interesting subject.
Do not at me about poker theory. At me about poker face theory, about the Lady Gaga song. Sure.
Oh, you're gonna pretend to know what the artist is this time, huh? Oh, that's
I
how it is.
I always know what the artist is.
Oh yeah, you definitely didn't. You definitely didn't intentionally get it wrong earlier, huh?
Uh-huh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay.
I stand by my mistakes. I am, if anything, a coward. Anyways. So the deathmatch just kind of mumbles around for a while. And like you said, it kind of feels like a game to lose. It's anybody's game to lose. They throw a lot of bets back and forth. I don't remember a lot about the specifics of this deathmatch.
Yeah, I mean, mostly it's just that Pung gets destroyed.
Yeah. Just repeatedly. And then he is eliminated. And the fact that I didn't even realize the game was over until the announcer had to literally be like, "And Pung is eliminated," showed how unengaged I was in this deathmatch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally last week I said this is the best deathmatch they've ever done, and it still is very fun as a game, but I learned it really does depend on the players and the narrative behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As much as it does. Like with any sport, like, you can watch basketball and appreciate basketball, but when you know about, like, who the players are and what their story is, it makes it way more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, last week when it was, like, Gura is on the line against
Jinho,
it's like, oh, my God, this is, like, an alliance being broken, blah, blah, blah. But this is like, oh, yeah, one of these people doesn't know how to play, and the other one is Pung. Like, and Pung loses. Big shocker, big disappointment.
Yeah.
Goodbye, happy cartoonist man.
Yeah. It's a bummer, but also, like, I don't know. Isn't he the one you'd pick to go home out of the current cast?
I think so.
Like, I feel like a lot of his gimmick... Wow. Wow, I just said his gimmick. That's fucking harsh. I'm sorry. I'm gonna back that one up. But like a lot of what he was up to is just sort of like capitalizing, like war profiteering. I'll just say it, war profiteering. He's capitalizing on people in awkward situations
and conflict
in order to like basically extort more garnets out of them. Like, oh, looks like you're in a real tough spot. I'd love to help you. And like, I mean, okay, that's a solid game plan, but like one, it's going to foster animosity among the rest of the player base towards you. And two, it didn't really seem like there was a plan, a stage two to that plan. Like, he had a bunch of garnets. It's not like he spent them to get big advantages in these games, right? Like, he spent some garnets this game, and then he got last place.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like he didn't really have a plan as to what to do with those garnets and how they would get him an advantage.
He was... Especially, like, in the Jinho Alliance was the one who was like, oh, I guess I'll just kind of, like, ride the coattails and, like, ride whoever else is playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't, like, stand out that much as his own strategist. Like, if anyone was going to leave amongst, like, the men, at least the remaining, then it was Poong to go, I guess.
So, I want a couple of calls from you right now. I want to, like, we could make these bets if you want. But I don't know that we need to, necessarily. Before we go into that, I'll just go ahead and say the garnet totals right now. Currently, Alan has 58.
Nice.
And Six has 87.
Oh, no.
That's, if you, in case you're keeping count, I got some from the Jinho, but I also lost some because of my wager that Songmin would win this main match and did not. So, mm-hmm. I paid you 15 for that one.
Did I actually bet, I don't know, we have to check the tapes or something, did I actually bet that Poong would leave?
No, you bet that Songmin would not win the main match. That was your bet.
Okay.
And that's correct, Songmin did not win the main match, so you got a payout from me.
Love it.
Now I'm doing a better job of documenting this stuff now. I'm being very specific, so.
I appreciate that.
So I'm curious who you think at this point is going to win the whole show, and who you think is going to go home next.
Can you run me down who's left?
Currently left in the field, we have Kyungran, Songmin, Sungyu, Yurim, Yunji, and Jinho.
Yunji's out next. Kyungran is going to win the game.
I agree that Kyungran is going to win. I feel like that's where, like, I want Songmin to win. I don't think it's going to happen.
I need Sungwon versus Kyungran as the final match. I need it so in my bones, in my soul, Six.
I'm at a point where I think Songmin's going home next.
Really? Why is that?
I think he's too much of a threat to the dangerous people who are left. I think we're at a point where you don't pick the easy person for the DM, that you pick the person you want to go home.
Yeah, you're right. Now it's out for blood.
And, like, Songmin is strong, but I feel like in a DM, he's going to lose to Jinho because Jinho's so good at seeing around the rules.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Kyungran is smart as fuck, and I think, like, it's a toss-up between them, but I don't know. She's so strong, and also I feel like if it was a DM where the outside world could influence it, where the other players could influence it, Kyungran would sway more people than Songmin could.
Oh, absolutely. She has she hasn't like become a cartoon character also the way that Songmin has. Like, he's fun, but he's also kind of like in everybody's like mind all the time because he's always around. He's talked to a lot of people. Kyungran is just nice and is working with people and cooperating and isn't like trying to like stir the pot or anything. She's just there to have a wholesome, hearty game that she's also going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that wholeheartedly.
The other possibility is Jinho goes home next.
Ooh.
Because it seems like, I don't know, like, we'll see the tone at the start of the next episode, but right now it feels like everybody would be gunning for Jinho.
Yeah. The Jinho Alliance is, I said this at the end of us watching it, but the Jinho Alliance is now one person.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has no allies.
And I don't know that he's that good at this point in the game at making them.
Right. I mean, they might have to for the next one, depending on how cooperative it is. Mm-hmm. But like someone might have to like ally with him out of necessity. But maybe not. Maybe they're just like, no, it's the five of us against you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how that goes.
I don't know, if I'm on that show and I see how he figured out the card back thing, I'm like, yeah, this guy is a problem. He needs to go.
Right, but this guy could also be an asset if I used him correctly.
I don't, but then he just threw Pung to the wolves like that.
True.
He Hihachi'd that boy. That boy came back out with a devil gene. I feel like you can't, like, that's the other thing, is you can't trust being in alliance with Jinho, because Jinho's going to be like, okay, I won. Boy, this is a hard choice, but I really feel like it'll make you stronger if I screw you real bad. I don't know. Do we want to close out with any wagers?
Harum pum pum pum. Wagers. I would like to wager that the winner of the next game is going to be Songmin, and I'm going to bet 5 garnets on that.
The next...
Just a,
you think 5 garnets next, on like, Songmin winning the next main match?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take that, mate. I'll take that bet.
It's small enough that I won't feel gutted like every time you Jinho me, but it's big enough that I'll feel a little bit of dopamine straight to the face.
Excellent.
When I inevitably get it.
Excellent. Any other wagers you want?
No, that's all for today.
Alan?
Yes.
Alan, you're cutting up. Hang on a second. Let me check my cord here, because it's the plug zone.
No, you can't. You can't bring it. Make it so fourth wall that I'm worried I have to look on my internet. Like, I am excited to someday meet you in real life, but at the other time, I think I would just be mad. Like, oh, this person. All right. This person who fucks confuses me every week with
this
the
person.
Zone.
This person who's like, oh no, our car died. Did you remember to plug in the plug zone?
Yeah.
This
is an extra car. Huh?
Yeah.
Hi, welcome to the plug zone where we plug our shit because we love our stuff and we want you to listen to it and experience it and love yourself. Can I go first?
Sure, certainly.
Wow. I can be found on Twitter. That's the social media website. I'm at Alan Ibrahim on there. That's my name. It's spelled AllenIbrahim. I'm also on 2 other podcasts. One is called Fireside Friends. It's found at firesidefriends.net or wherever you listen to those. It's a monthly pop culture discussion podcast that I co-host with Ryan and Katie. I've been told it's very good. I also co-host Chats, a television podcast, which is a television discussion podcast that I do with my best friend Magellan, where we have a casual chat every week about a TV show of our choosing. Right now, we're getting close to wrapping up the newsroom, and it's a good time.
It's really good if you want to hear someone make fun of Californians and the way they talk. I've listened to your latest episode, by the way.
Oh, don't worry. The one we just recorded before this is we do that joke again.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, great. Cha, brah.
Shaka.
Okay.
Oh, it's horrible. What's your whole situation?
Well, I've got depression, and
No. reverse. Save that for the post show.
Oh boy.
No. What's your plug situation?
Oh, I see. I was confused.
It's direct current, 120 volts.
I'm only willing to be so much of a pain in the ass. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. If you have thoughts about the show, if you have thoughts about all ending on poker, I'm on there. And also other things, probably. But, you know, be nice. I'm also on a bunch of podcasts, and I will not go too in-depth, but basically I have 4 other podcasts, 2 are weekly, 2 are monthly. The 2 weekly shows are Bottle Crow, which is a Dota podcast. You can find that anywhere. The other is Oops All Anime. That is a patron-only podcast. You'd have to go to the Patreon at patreon.com/scanlanemedia and ship in $1 a month to get access to that and hear us get really upset about anime, or sometimes really happy at anime. It's fun. We have a good time. We have guests. The other 2 shows are Novel Not New, which is a monthly visual novel podcast. It's kind of like a book club for visual novels. We're about to cover Danganronpa V3. That episode will go up probably next week.
You loved that game.
I managed to be angry about a thing for over 2 hours.
Did you immediately go to sleep afterwards?
Pretty close.
That's what happens whenever I get angry.
Oh, it's exhausting. And then the other monthly podcast I have is Neutral Game. Do you like fighting games? Do you wish you liked fighting games? You should listen to the Neutral Game. We're fighting game people who are friendly and don't assume you know a bunch of shit. We'll help you have a good time with them. Anyway, that's my plug stuff.
We did it.
We did it. We finished the show.
And this time we're going to finally nail the ending. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Garnet Wager. Have a...
Okay, bye.
Bye.